Welcome to On My Walk, the reading podcast that helps you capture some of those aha moments from reading and apply them to your life and leadership. Well, today is April 4th, 2018, sadly significant in that 50 years ago today, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated while standing on the balcony of the Lorraine Motel in Memphis, Tennessee. And why? For doing something our founding fathers failed to do in 1790. So I'm thinking, how apropos, how providential that on my walk, I'm reading chapter 4 of Founding Brothers by Joseph Ellis, entitled The Silence. And in this chapter, what Ellis does is he talks about a 1790 petition that was brought by two Quaker delegates who asked the House to immediately put an end to the African slave trade. And what Ellis does in this chapter in American history is he describes why the petition was considered so out of place by some, not surprisingly, by those predominantly who lived in the South, and how the petition was shuttled to committee by a favorable vote of some 43-11 in hopes by these delegates that it would, in the words of Ellis, to put slavery on the road to extinction. But ultimately, what came out was a final report passed by the House that would, instead of stopping slavery once and for all, actually silence the issue of emancipation for decades. Now, looking back, some might ask, how in the world? But if we examine our Constitution, Article 1, Section 9, Paragraph 1 of the United States Constitution reads, "The migration or importation of such persons," referring to slaves, "as any of the states now existing shall think proper to admit, shall not be prohibited by the Congress prior to the year 1808. But a tax or duty may be imposed on such importation not exceeding $10 for each person." So the Constitution, drawn up in 1787, stated the federal government could not interfere with the slave trade for 20 years, from 1787 to 1808. And we might look at that and say, why? Well, what Ellis writes is this: all the southern states had ratified the Constitution with that understanding as a primal condition. In other words, we are going to put the issue of slavery on the shelf for the next 20 years. And for some of us who look at that today and say, that's outlandish, what we needed to realize, or we need to realize, is there was no way the South would agree to the Constitution and enter the Union apart from that stipulation. It's just the way it was. So you had this 20-year stipulation, and essentially, it bought the South time. And they thought, in many respects, that it was to their advantage, and some in the South no doubt felt that, well, ultimately, that 20 years, they could probably protract the issue of slavery out indefinitely. Well, the North, for their part, they felt the Declaration of Independence, all men are created equal, would mean the eventual elimination of slavery. So they could give it 20 years. Otherwise, as I pointed out a couple of days ago in my podcast, Hindsight is a Tricky Tool, the new nation, they felt, was just too fragile. It would fall apart. It would crumble over this issue of slavery. So we're going to let the issue ride for 20 years in order to establish this nation. So the issue goes to committee, because after all, the fact that slavery can't be touched for 20 years didn't mean that it couldn't be talked about for 20 years. So at least let's talk about it. And listen to what Ellis says about that.
Hindsight permits us to listen to the debate of 1790 with knowledge that none of the participants possessed, for we know full well what they could perceive dimly, if at all, namely, that slavery would become the central and defining problem for the next 70 years of American history, that the inability to take decisive action against slavery in the decades immediately following the Revolution permitted the size of the enslaved population to grow exponentially, and the legal and political institutions of the developing U.S. government to become entwined in compromises with slavery's persistence, and that eventually over 600,000 Americans would die in the nation's bloodiest war to resolve the crisis, a trauma generating social shockwaves that would reverberate for at least another century.
Now, Ellis does a masterful job of presenting this incident, and there are a couple of things to note. One has to do with hindsight, and the other has to do with this issue of the silence. And with respect to hindsight, what Ellis says, which I think we need to hear, is what is familiar history for us was still the unknown future for them. And their debate showed that the North and South were interested in the future, but they were both looking at two different dates. Now, some might look at that and say, Tommy, what in the world do you mean by that? Well, the North, they were looking at 1776 and the Declaration of Independence. And the way they read the Declaration of Independence is they read it as a promissory note, an unambiguous march toward emancipation. It was going to happen. The South, on their hand, they looked at 1787, and they felt that this 20-year stipulation was somewhat of a gentleman's agreement to permit it, and that it bought them time, and when it got right down to it, they always had their trump card, and their trump card was, we'll just leave the Union. And consequently, Ellis says no one stepped forward to call their bluff. So hindsight, what's familiar history for us was still the unknown future for them. The second piece is the issue of the silence. I mean, this sad fact that those who fought for our freedom from Great Britain's tyranny could not or would not address the racial tyranny that existed as a cancer within our country. And Ellis writes, the ultimate legacy of the American Revolution on slavery was not an implicit compact that it be ended, or a gentleman's agreement between the two sections that it be tolerated, but rather, hear what he says, a calculated obliviousness that it not be talked about at all. Slavery, he writes, was the unmentionable family secret or the proverbial elephant in the middle of the room. Now, were there champions of freedom at that time? Absolutely. As a matter of fact, one individual that steps up at this time is Benjamin Franklin, who, as one of his last acts of great patriotism, would drive home the point that slavery was incongruous with the revolutionary principles upon which our nation was founded. And he's strong on this. But he would die 3 weeks later. And in the midst of that, there was just a lot going on. John Adams, who was a very vocal opponent of slavery, he just didn't feel the timing was right, so he wasn't going to let it come to the Senate. And Alexander Hamilton, he was fixed on resolving the nation's financial issues. And George Washington, he feels, you know, the entire issue, well, it's a little bit of an embarrassing nuisance, and he was just going to let it ride. Consequently, you have the silence. And that brings me to my aha moment on the 50th anniversary of Dr. Martin Luther King's assassination. And it is this. It's simple, but it's profound. Speak up. And don't stop speaking up for what is right. The last chapter of Proverbs, one of the books of Hebrew wisdom literature, begins, the words of King Lemuel, an oracle that his mother taught him. And then he says this, open your mouth for the mute, for the rights of all who are destitute. Open your mouth, judge righteously, defend the rights of the poor and needy. Well, the founding fathers were, like all of us, imperfect. And instead of opening their mouth, they went silent. Ellis writes, perhaps it is as inevitable, even preferable, that slavery as a national problem be removed from the Congress to the churches, where it could come under scrutiny as a sin requiring national purging, rather than as a social dilemma requiring a political solution. That, in any event, is exactly what happened. And today on April 4th, 2018, we remember one such churchman, a pastor from Atlanta, who spoke up for what is right. And he kept on speaking up for what is right, right up to the point it cost him his very life. And today we honor the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King and all those who speak up for the rights of all who are destitute. So speak up. And keep on speaking up for what is right. That's my thought on my walk with Joseph Ellis and Founding Brothers. Now what you do with it, that's for you to work out on your walk through life.